Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're back. It's 7 past. Look at the folks coming back in the building right now. Isn't it convenient?
Not one of them, you know, coming in and saying, thank you for staying.
Yeah.
Thank you for looking death in the face.
Yes.
I mean, and continuing to do your job.
You kept WCC on the radio. Meanwhile, they were across the street at the hotel bar, you know?
Oogling the firefighters coming into the building.
Is it oogling or is it ogling?
I don't know.
Yeah. But I don't think you should feel that good because the last time you ran from this building
Why the hell do you think I'm still here right now so we didn't have another 10-year bit going on that we could run into the ground and just stomp it out?
Oh, I already did. I already did last hour. Well, it's the truth, though. Yes or no? Did you come in here and
because
say...
Because I was forced. They said, you will be fired if you do not leave. Right
now. Hit the buzzer. I mean, you were forced. Dan, do you think in any way they literally told Adam, we're going to fire you if you don't leave?
He was nearly... made us go three blocks down.
Yeah, he was nearly bodily removed today. Sure, I believe him.
I stared death in the face today and walked down into this newsroom to do the damn news.
And then you came down here and looked at me and said, shoot, I thought the fire got you a little bit. You know, maybe grazed a little bit. But, yeah, the staff, they ran quickly. Did they think, hey, I wonder if Chad, Adam, and Dan are going to be okay? I really didn't sense that. I'm going to say this. If Byron Buxton was in the building during that false alarm, I'm guessing he still would have got hurt. What are we going to do about that guy? So Byron, as pretty much about as our show ends, they announced what seemed to be inevitable when he went out to the shoulder guy. He operates on all the shoulders on various people.
Dr. El Atrache?
Yeah, just let's call him shoulder guy. When you see him, and by the way, they didn't wait long, did they? Hey,
no.
Let me look at you. We think it's surgery. Byron goes, when? About 10 minutes. Right, Carter? They didn't give him a long time for a second opinion. Hey, you're here. I'm busy. here's a gown. Get going. So he's out. There were some numbers on him. Games available since he's called up. He has started 358 out of the 731 games. 358 of the 731 games. We've had the debate here. Other people have had good debates on it also about his approach. Can you play smarter? It's not just getting older, but you play in a more prudent, efficient, and long-lasting way. And I've been in the group of yes, it can be done. I'm just not sure he shows any signs to doing it. You know, this one, of all the injuries, if either you're watching it live or you saw the highlight, compared to so many other times, this was nothing. But obviously, it was far from nothing. You know, he basically, when you count from when he went out, what is it going to be, like 7-8 months when he would not have been available? The one the ball guys all say is, well, he's got to play deeper. Well, yeah, sure. You can do that. But 87 games this year, I'm not willing to go quite as far as Rocco that he was one of the best players in the game, but he obviously was vital to what was going on. He can have such an impact on this game, on the game in ways that I think the modern analytics shine more light on his greatness than anybody else on this team for the impact he can make. But if you're Derek Falvey and you're planning out your future and you're looking, because they're going to face some serious monetary decisions this offseason with Barrios, with Rosario, with numerous starting pitchers. I'd say the Kepler Polacco signings look rather impressive right now. If you're sitting down in Byron Buxton, you know, and you're thinking about, hey, Buxton, people say, we'd like a 4 or 5 year deal. We're going to buy out a little bit of arbitration. How do you negotiate that deal right now, Adam? As great as he is when he's playing maybe half the time? I make you the financial guru for the Twins. How are you making that deal work?
It's difficult because is the problem the fact that he is so fast that when he impacts things, it just does that much more damage? Is that the issue? Because if that's the issue, I'm telling Byron, maybe put on, make him gain like 50 pounds.
So I think what you're
maybe have a fat Byron Buxton out in the outfield.
I think what you're suggesting is he spends the offseason with you.
Slow down a little bit.
Yeah, Dan, what do you have that idea? He spends the offseason.
He and Adam go hang at B-dubs.
Yeah, B-dubs.
Pounds and wings.
These monster drinks you're now having on. So we need a, like a fatter Byron Buxton.
I just think that time spent playing is as great as he can be, and the impact he clearly has, that's not a good ratio of time spent for the money you're paying him.
So, can we look how long do they have him under control again? Right? And they played the game with him last year. Remember, he was healthy enough. They could have called him up. They didn't.
That was the point I was going to bring up, is that you've already started whatever negotiations you may theoretically enter into, you're already starting in a hole because you screwed up and messed with him last year.
Well, they don't think they screwed up. But they
can think that all they want, but Byron's people are going to come in certainly with
him. Well, they screwed him. That's what they did.
Yeah,
he was healthy, and they said, well, it played a part. It was the only reason why he didn't call him.
Oh, totally the only reason.
So he's
that's what I'm saying, is that you already have this animosity there, you know. So if you're going to try and come back at Byron's people and say, well, hey, you know, here's the ratio of games that you're missing, so we got to factor that in, Byron's people are going to come back and say, oh, yeah, well, what about the games last year when he was healthy and you wouldn't play it?
But in this case, Adam, Valdi and Levine are right. I mean, you're playing half the games. And yes, for a lot of the season, there was a direct correlation to him playing and him not playing, but then in August when he was out, they won a bunch of games.
Buxton's free agency eligible in 23.
Okay. So they still have, that's a long time still.
Yeah.
That's a long time. So the whole idea of free agency with younger guys is you give them more money when they're arbitration eligible to get a couple more years. I mean, what's the max contract now guys are getting, unless they're Trout and they're Harper, right? Is it 4 or 5 for mortals? Is anybody going more than 5? I don't think so.
It doesn't seem like it. Used to be like it was, you know, 14, 15, right? I mean, or what's the 1 year when they slap the label on you, right? Or the deal where they can get a draft pick if you sign someplace else. The minimum offer. The 1 year minimum offer.
Oh, yeah,
like
yeah,
17
yeah.
or something.
Yeah,
it?
No, but what I'm saying is length of contract. I'm saying
how long?
How long contract? Because they've cut those down. So they don't have to worry about that as much now. But, it'll also be interesting if you go to arbitration with the guy. Or you're trying to negotiate when, by the way, your manager's on record saying, hey, when he was playing, he was one of the best players in the game. And so if I'm the agent, I'm going to say, guess what? My guy, according to you, is one of the best players in the game. And then they start going 1, 2, and they get to 70, and they go, what's that? Well, that's the number of games Byron wasn't eligible to play. So it is an interesting debate that'll be a part of the Twins and a part of Byron Buxton. Unless Adam's solution does work, that he spends the winter with him, gets slower, and gains 50 pounds. Okay, so we saw this. I saw this a couple weeks ago. It was various people covering well-known legendary country tunes. I love covers. Carter, do you like covers when various people?
I do like covers.
Yeah. That's Frank Zappa, Ring of Fire. What are your thoughts?
I'm not lukewarm on that. I'm never a huge Frank Zappa
guy. I haven't been either. That's it. But if we want bizarre,
that's right there. Yeah.
If we want memorable, I think we've got it right there. Our guest, Garrett Graff, is going to join us in about 12 minutes. Author of the new highly touted book, The Only Plane in the Sky, an oral history of 9/11. It's always good when the tech guy for the station does text you too when the fire alarms are going off. If there is a fire, could you video it? I think it's a fair request, though. I think he was only doing his job. Cook, doing his job or inappropriate?
No, because if he was doing his job, he'd be the one in here videoing it.
That's good.
He's got the best equipment. Yeah,
he's got all the stuff.
Honest. Yeah, so if I would have said to him, hey, Jared, I need you, he's across the street with Carter.
Well, yeah.
How does it feel knowing our news guy had a chance to look death in the eye and instead he went to the court bar?
I'm jealous, really, to be honest with you. I wish I could have bailed.
Yeah. You would have went down in flames with me. Is that really the way?
Really? Think about that.
Is that really the way you want to go?
That is the ending of my
Adam, life. Is that how you want to go?
No.
Smoke inhalation with the two of us?
Mm-hmm.
A store cashier in Tokyo has been arrested on allegations of stealing credit card information. Did you guys, either one of you guys see this story?
No.
Adam's saying no. Dan, did you see this?
No.
Okay. How do you think she was able to steal the credit card information? 1,300 customers. She used one tool.
I did see that.
Okay, you're out.
I'm sorry, I'm out.
You're out?
Yeah.
Adam, what's your guess?
Her brain. She's a photographic memory.
That's
it. Instantly remembers the credit card.
Very good. Bonus points for you. Her memory. Is this possible?
Sure.
Okay, so.
Not for us, but.
I show up, I do the card, I see it, and then as soon as I walk away, she just remembers it, so she's just jotting them all down.
What's the term? There's a term, eidetic memory, I think it's called. It's essentially the fancy term for photographic memory. People can just look at stuff and instant recall it. I'm not saying it's possible that's what she has. But
I'd like to have that. Carter, would you like to have that? The San Francisco Giants. Are you following the Giants closely, Adam Carter? Can't get enough of San Francisco Giants?
They were my favorite team growing up, second only to the Twins, of course.
Can I just stop you for 1 second?
Yeah.
Because I think you missed a big part of that story. You know
how
they caught her? She used those numbers, those credit card numbers, to order a bunch of stuff and had it sent to her house.
Yeah.
So, great memory. Not a lot of comments.
Yeah, poor
street smarts.
Yeah, the execution, not so good.
Yeah.
Not so.
Sorry,
good. That's a very good important item that I had left out.
I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah,
how they caught her.
You know what it is? My memory of the story from when I jotted it down earlier, not as good as hers.
Apparently not.
I think we established
it. But you have enough common sense that if you're going to steal a bunch of stuff, you're not going to have it shipped to your house.
I go to Adams. Right. I send it all to Adams, and I feel or from the dark man.
I send it to Royce.
I send it to Royce's house. Yeah, we'll have Freeberg tell that story again.
Yeah,
it's an all timer. I've got two San Francisco Giants items. Well, three actually. One, why were they your second favorite team?
I was a huge fan of Will the Thrill, William Neuschler Clark.
That's the middle name, huh?
Yeah.
Neuschler.
Yeah.
Family name or?
I don't know. I didn't get to know him that well.
Yeah. Neuschler.
Mm-hmm.
Very distinctive voice.
Yes.
Will Clark. Very high-pitched.
Yes.
Okay. The stat.
Sweet swing, though.
Oh, very sweet swing. Very Mark Grace-like.
Yep.
Very
similar careers.
Yes.
Very similar careers.
A lesser Joe Mauer, Will Clark, right? Is that fair?
Swing, you mean?
Just career.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
You know? The first one is remarkable. On the Levitard show, they have stat of the day. I heard this today. Bruce Bochy has been managing since 1995. Okay. He is going to step down in 2019. As of last night, his record, 1,995 wins, 2,019 losses. He should have retired before that game, correct?
Absolutely.
Carter?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And I forget who on the crew. I think it might have been Chris Cody. All-time greatest stat. I think it might be one of the greatest stats ever.
Has to be the only time that's ever happened in baseball history, right? Has to be.
I just think it's so absurdly brilliant. It's fantastic.
It's phenomenal.
I mean, it's just, again, I'm just going to repeat this. He started managing in 1995. He's been around a long time, by the way. Long time. How many of those years were with the Padres? He was with the Padres for a while. No. Major would know that like instantaneously. Started in 1995. He's going to retire in 2019. And his record again, 1,995 wins, 2,019 losses. Adam, that's a lot of time in the dugout.
Yes. A lot of time in the clubhouse, dugout.
Planes. I mean, would you have fallen asleep multiple times by then?
For sure.
I mean, with some of the – I mean, yes, three titles.
Yep.
So he will be a Hall of Famer, right? even though his record will be well below 500. The Giants, who, by the way, they're back in the tank. Apparently, they should have traded Madison Bumgarner. We'd still take him. If somehow the Twins can cheat, still take him.
Can I have an on-air show meeting with you?
Yeah, sure.
Our 235 guest now has a CNN interview, and we had asked for at least 10 minutes, and now I'm telling 8 unless we want to break early and get him on.
All right, let's do that. Let's break early. I mean, hold on a second. Is he saying Garrett Graff, the only plane in the sky in oral history of 9/11? He's saying somehow that CNN is more important than our show? Is that what you say?
I'm very disappointed. I think he is.
Adam, how about we do this? We even bump the news just so we can get to our guy. Let's do that. Garrett Graff in minutes after traffic and weather. Dan and I both saw this book, and so many journalists and other folks giving it great praise. The author is Garrett Graff. We obviously have witnessed so many excellent pieces of journalism on the horrid events of 18 years ago. But I'm always intrigued when somebody tries a new approach and it's so well regarded, and that's what we're hearing so far about the book, The Only Plane in the Sky, an oral history of 9/11, and Garrett Graff is kind enough to join us. Garrett, you know there's literally hundreds and hundreds of pieces of journalism on that day, on that follow-up. What did you want to do, and what have you done with your book to give a different perspective?
Thanks for having me. The goal for this book was to try to tell 9/11 through the voices only of the people who experienced it. You know, when we sort of say never forget, increasingly what we remember are only the facts of the day. You know, nearly 3,000 people killed, the four planes, the four crashes, the Twin Towers, the Pentagon, Shanksville. And what I think is getting lost in that is the memory of what 9/11 was like to live. You know, the fear, the chaos, the confusion, the trauma of living through that day. So this book tries to trace and recreate and recapture that day through the voices of 480 Americans coast to coast, morning to night.
Yeah, an extraordinary number. Part of the excerpt I read was the kind of the TikTok of with the mobile White House, you know, where the president was in Florida. And among the things that stood out to me, and I think we forget about this also when we're in 2019, is just the lack of communication, right? And even early on where Ari Fleischer is saying, you know, we all think of our phones now. I just had a high-tech pager. That's how the lack of communication. And then even on Air Force One, as opposed to CNN, Fox, they're just going in and out of local stations trying to get information.
Exactly. I mean, part of this is, you know, really trying to recapture 2001. I mean, we sort of think of 9/11 as part of our modern world, but the communications of that day were actually quite primitive. I mean, the BlackBerry was one of the cutting edge tools of that day. You know, Apple stock was at $1.24 that morning. And as you said, you know, the president of the United States that day had no email aboard Air Force One. He had no access to cable TV, satellite TV. And that as he's flying around, he's using rabbit ears antennas on Air Force One to pick up local TV news as fading in and out as they fly over urban areas. And, you know, it's incredible to think that in 2001, the president of the United States on 9/11 for most of the day, knew less about what was happening than the average American sitting at home watching cable news.
I just want people to take that in, because that's what I get from this excerpt, and that is hard to fathom. That all that time when fairly early in the day, it's once he left Florida, it's where's the president? Where's the president? And if somebody was listening to this radio station, or more importantly, they're watching the television stations, they were more aware than the president flying in Air Force One.
Exactly. And that you know, those communication challenges persisted throughout the day. And that's part of, you know, what it's, to me, the power of going back and recreating 9/11 as people lived it, which is the story that we tell today of 9/11 is much neater and cleaner than the way that we actually lived it, than those of us who were alive that day experienced it. You know, we now know the attack began at 8:46 in the morning. It was over at 102 minutes later with the collapse of the second tower at 10:29 Eastern time. And that was not the way that any of us experienced it that day. You know, we didn't know when it began. And we didn't know when it was over. You know, well into the afternoon, we were worried about additional hijacked planes. They were worried about attacks far from the New York and Washington itself. I mean, the Sears Tower in Chicago was evacuated. Disney closed down that day. And the extent to which, you know, the entire nation sort of felt that fear and worried whether they were next. That's part of what we now forget. And yet that fear and that trauma and that chaos and confusion, to me, is incredibly important to understand and remember 18 years later, because that's what drove the decision-making of the policymakers and the leaders of the country in the days and weeks and months after 9/11. I mean, and now we have this new generation of Americans coming of age right now. I mean, today will mark the first time that people born after 9/11 can vote in the United States. And you now have American servicemen and women being deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan, the wars spawned by 9/11, and who were born after the attacks. I mean, we have people who are fighting in a war older than they are. And for that generation, I think it's important to capture that day's experience as it was lived in America, so that we can remember sort of why we made the decisions after 9/11 that we did.
So I want to stay on the lack of communications, because I think such an illuminating part of this book. Again, the book is The Only Plane in the Sky, an Oral History of 9/11. Garrett Graff, the author, is with us. Tell me about the dialogue between the White House itself, where the vice president is at, and then the president, and just the decision making and the role that Vice President Cheney was making that day.
Yeah, the vice president, of course, at the White House that day, the president in Sarasota, Florida, to start the day. The vice president hustled into the White House bunker under the north lawn of the White House, where he was also sort of largely cut off from the outside world in that bunker. The technology in that bunker that day was such that they could not both have a conference call and watch TV at the same time. And so sort of through the day, they're like turning down the volume on the conference calls in order to turn up the volume on the TV, or vice versa, to try to figure out what's going on across the country. And the vice president in that bunker ends up being asked for authority to shoot down hijacked airliners. I spoke as part of this book research to Commander Anthony Barnes, the Navy officer who was serving as the liaison between the Pentagon and the White House that day, and had to go to Vice President Cheney and ask for shoot down authority. He's never spoken publicly before, but he told me the story for the book. And what he explained was that he actually asked repeatedly for the vice president to confirm that order, because he knew how momentous, how historic that moment actually was. And he wanted to be sure that there was no confusion about what the vice president was ordering.
You also talk about Andy Card, Ari Fleischer, and another individual about the communications our country was having with Vladimir Putin that day, and how helpful Putin actually was.
Yeah, and this is, again, sort of thinking back to 2001 and sort of thinking about the alternate futures that could have unfolded from that day. That morning, actually, the United States was engaged in its largest annual military exercise, known as Global Guardian, meant to repel a Russian nuclear attack on the United States. And part of the confusion that rippled across the country through the FAA, through the military, through the Pentagon that morning was the confusion about whether these attacks were part of the exercise or they were real world. And as the military bases get asked to scramble fighters, they sort of keep asking, is this exercise or is this real world? And finally, when they realize that this is a real world terrorist attack on the United States, one of the first telephone calls to Condoleezza Rice, the national security advisor at the White House, is from Russian President Vladimir Putin, who says, we are going to ground all of our planes today. We want to make sure that you don't have to worry about us at all today. And we're going to let you concentrate on solving what you need to do for your own country.
That is amazing. I'm a little skeptical that would happen today. Last thing is, I know you have to get going to another interview. You interview a lot of people whose lives were saved by something that either happened the night before or the morning, and if it would have been more of their normal routine, they would have been in their towers. Is there one or two stories you could share with us before you have to go?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that really leapt out at me as I went back over these stories and read the experiences of that day was the way that the random life choices, the types of things that we make a million times a day without ever really thinking, played such a large part in who lived and who died. And so, Michael LaMonaco, the chef at Windows on the World that day, the restaurant atop the North Tower, he would have been normally at his kitchen that morning by 8:30. But that morning, of all mornings, he stopped to get a new pair of glasses at Lens Crafters in the basement of the World Trade Center shopping concourse and missed the last elevator to the top of the towers. 72 of his colleagues died that day, and he didn't. Joseph Lott, one of the stories I tell in the book, an attendee at a conference at Windows on the World that day, and he was having breakfast in the Marriott Hotel at the base of the towers that morning, and one of his colleagues at the conference gave him a new tie that she had seen and bought because she thought he would like it. And he was so touched by the gesture that he was like, I'm going to go back to my hotel room, change my shirt, and put on this tie. The types of things that we would sort of do without thinking at all. And his colleagues go on to the conference. He goes back to his hotel room. And as he's changing his shirt, he feels the impact of that first plane. His colleagues didn't make it.
Wow. Well, I mean, and like you said, there's numerous stories like that. Or there's stories where somebody was there and normally wouldn't have been there. Right? I mean, it's obviously haunting that way. Garrett, thank you so much. Congratulations
on the
book,
me.
And I appreciate the time.
All right. Bye-bye.
Garrett Graff, he's got to literally just run right now and jump on CNN. He actually had taped a feature, so he was on Fox while we were talking. Or Dan, that wasn't Garrett Graff, and it was somebody else. I've heard him many times. It sounded like him.
If it wasn't him, it's somebody that sounded remarkably like him.
Or maybe there's two Garrett Graffs.
I think it could be twins or something. Yeah,
it could be. Because I'm looking up, and all of a sudden they're on Fox.
He is on Fox.
He's speaking, and then he's speaking.
I'm pretty sure by the time he gets to the end of the day, that will have been his favorite interview, the one he just did with you.
I think he's forgotten the interview already. that's just a hunch. They're like, oh, were you on with what station? I don't know, just some dog and pony show. Hey, it's 2:44. That is your Lindis Construction time check. Time to call for 50% off installation labor on Infinity by Marvin Windows. You think the Twins are offering good deals at their games? I have another baseball organization who's making it rather tempting to see a ball game this weekend. Here's our second item on the San Francisco Giants. Apparently, where your home for San Francisco Giants talk. I would like to see a ball game there. It still
I would.
Has.
They're coming here next year.
Yeah, that's well. That doesn't happen. Well, I could go there. I mean, I probably could get a seat then if they're coming here.
For sure.
So this Saturday, they have an offer when they're taking on the Miami Marlins. It must be good to be a sports fan in South Florida right now. Oof. You have the hockey team, which is irrelevant because they're in Fort Lauderdale. You have the basketball team. You got Jimmy, and I'm assuming by about December 15th, he'll decide, hey, they can't win. Mm-hmm. I've got my salary. It's guaranteed, so I want to go somewhere else. So he'll cause problems. The Dolphins can't beat the Tommies, and the Marlins look like they're, as Kornheiser sometimes says on PTI, 2 years away from being 2 years away.
Right.
Right? So what they're doing is they're offering this deal a 2-for-1 on Alaska Airlines flight vouchers for the first 40,000 fans. Let me give you the details. Whoa. Buy one coach class ticket at the regular price and get a second ticket for the taxes. The discount code is valid for 50% off coach base fare levels published on the site. Valid for itineraries with exactly two people traveling together and booked and ticketed at the same time in the same reservation and the same fare valid for a one-way or round-trip travel. So I'm going to read it again here.
Yeah.
One coach class ticket, and you just pay taxes. Here's the part where I'm a little baffled, though. The discount code is valid for 50% off coach base fare levels published at AlaskaAir.com. But the deal says a 2-for-1 flight voucher. Okay. So
50% off of both tickets gets you 2-for-1.
I guess that's it. I guess that's the way to do it. The StubHub, the typical price for the Friday game, Giants Marlins, because it's captured the imagination of the nation, as Denny Green once said, $6. That's the cheapest. I can't believe it's not free.
Right.
I mean, who's going to that game outside of the ballpark, right? Saturday, the cheapest price, $33.
Yeah, go figure.
It's solely to see the game. Carter, are you willing to see the Giants and Marlins get 50% off two tickets for Alaska Air? It's an amazing offer.
Yeah.
That's what they're given.
Alaska, I think last week had a 2-day fare sale that the Star Tribune highlighted, and I just was playing around with it, and it was incredible. I mean, it was like I just picked a day, and I guess it would have been January to like Tampa, and it was like $44 each way.
Well, Frontier a couple weeks ago.
That's what it was.
Okay.
Frontier.
Yeah, but
and it's like, man, it's like just book it and then, you know, find a place to stay. I've never been to Tampa.
Right. Right. Well, Dan, you sent me something last week. I think it was like an app where basically you'll get alerts for like the cheapest flights based out of your airport on a regular basis. Unfortunately, with their airport right now, you got to get there 7 hours ahead of time.
There's that. So as soon as you book the deal, you just basically got to start driving to the airport.
Is that getting any better, by the way? Could somebody text me 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226 if you've flown recently? Because the latest we saw, what was it, about a week ago or so, Adam, where they were saying 3 hours ahead for a flight. That sounds pleasant, don't you think? Some other quick rapid-fire stories here. A South Florida woman who claimed to be a fortune teller has been sentenced to 3 years and 4 months in prison for taking $1.6 million from a Texas woman to remove a curse from her family. Investigators say the woman met the victim in Houston in 07, gained the woman's trust, and convinced her the curse had been placed on her and her family. She claimed she needed large sums of money for crystals and candles to perform meditations that would lift the curse. Adam, that's a pretty good meditation. Yeah. And candles, don't you say, for 1.6? If you're that much of a sucker and you fall for this, should you get the money back? Judge Carter, yes or no? Should you get the money back?
Yes, it still was taken from you in a legal measure, no matter what kind of dope you are. Somebody took advantage of you. I mean,
you're right. It's just, I mean,
I know what you're saying.
There's got to be a little buyer beware.
Yeah, maybe. But
this has come up before. Tammy Baldwin, she basically saying that the 12 Wisconsin border counties that are, you know, like Hudson or Superior, that they, when the two teams, when the Vikings-Packers match up, when the games match up, not the teams,
right.
And it happens 3 times this year, that in Wisconsin, anywhere in Wisconsin, they should get the Packers game. She's right.
She's absolutely right.
Carter, you want to be the other side?
Yeah. Why not? Why can't some of them have the Vikings game?
I think you just are playing the role. I don't think that was enthusiastic.
No, I'm saying, well, they're,
Dan, do you
look,
think?
I lived in one of those counties. I lived in actually Interior County, and there were still plenty of Viking fans there.
If you're in the state, you get that state's team.
Yeah. 100%. What? No, I mean, it's a no-brainer.
What if the team is like it's not like Green Bay's real close, right? If you're in Hudson, you're obviously a hell of a lot closer to Metrodome Part 2.
Do you honestly think there are more Packer fans or Viking fans in Hudson, Wisconsin?
Adam Carter, answer that question. In Hudson, more Viking fans or Packer fans? Is it close?
I don't think so, no.
It's still,
but there's still a sizable Viking fandom part population.
What do we think it is? 80-20?
Because a lot of them are, you know, still working here.
Yeah, they're just there for the taxes, right? So if I said it's 80-20, does that seem reasonable?
Totally reasonable.
But, yeah, I mean, is it that complicated for the Comcast and the...
It shouldn't be.
Right? You should be able to pull that off, right? Somebody's suggesting it's 50-50 in Hudson.
No way.
I don't think so.
What do you think the state of Minnesota entirety of football fans, Vikings to Packers?
That's a very good question.
80-20? Or is that even low for the Packers?
No.
No, I think that's a pretty good number.
I'll even go a little higher. I'll go 85-15. It's been a pretty good run since 1961.
Yeah, but still,
right?
There's a lot of people don't give up that allegiance.
Well, we hear that all the time, right? That the Vikings are the number one team in the state of all the professional sports, and the number two team is the Green Bay Packers.
That's not true.
But you do hear that narrative.
Oh, I hear
time.
That. Do you believe that?
I wouldn't be shocked only in that the NFL is so farther ahead than anybody else in terms of popularity.
Who is the number two team in this town? Counting the U of M, counting the Lynx, counting the Tommies where the winners play.
It's the Twins.
We must have been bullying this weekend since we beat somebody by like 150.
Going to say Gophers, but a lot of those fans have passed.
Gopher football, you're going to say?
Well, just Gopher fans, yeah. But I think Twins, too. The Gophers, probably three.
I think we got to pick one team, though. You got to say either Gopher football or Gopher basketball, because that's cheating. I think.
Let's go for football.
You think Gopher football is three in this state? I don't. But I'm trying to think who three is. Right? Because I'm with you. It's the Twins as two. Were the Twins two last summer?
I still think so.
Even when they're terrible, are they still clearly the number two team?
Probably, just based on longevity, I think.
It's a fair question, though.
Who's number three? When... In the rare exceptions when my club's good, they're number three. But,
but that's
in
rare.
30-some years, they've advanced past the first round one time. I back that up because those rare years when the Wolves and Wild are both good, the television ratings, when they go head-to-head, noticeably favor.
Was that one year, Wolves. Though? Was that one
season? Yeah, I mean, so, yeah.
04?
Well, 03, 04 right there. But, yeah, so I... Can't be the Wild, can it? I don't know. Maybe the Packers are three.
That's possible.
I bet you they
are. Maybe the Packers are
ahead. I go with the Pack before the Wild.
I mean, Gopher football, the average age of Gopher football fan is 99. It's my father. He's the median age. We got to go. We survived into the fire alarm. Paul and Jordana are next. We'll talk tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.